Well, today is Compassion Sunday, and you have an opportunity to support and to be a sponsor for a child that looks just like that. We're going to talk about that a little bit more later on, but one of the reasons that Rhonda and I are so excited about Compassion is because it's an organization that works through the local church. And so your $38 goes not just to provide school equipment and supplies and material things. It does that, but it doesn't just give them material things. It gives them and it connects them with the local church and gives them the hope of Jesus Christ, so that your $38 doesn't just give them hope in this world, which it does, but it also gives them hope for eternity as well. So that's an incredible thing, and we'll talk about that more a little bit later as the service goes on. Today, this morning, we are in the week four of a five-week series called Do Something. And so if you're just checking this out now, first time in, you're kind of getting in on the caboose of the train, all right? And so I would encourage you to go back to our website and listen to the other ones. Hopefully you can kind of catch up with us. But kind of the premise of our whole series is that God has richly blessed us, that God has just poured out his blessing on us specifically as American Christians living in this time and this place, that God has richly blessed us. In fact, the very first week of the series, I tried to help us put things into perspective because we don't usually think about it in these terms, but we gave some statistics, one of which was this, that if you make $37,000 per year, you're in the top 4% of all wage earners in the whole world. Isn't that incredible? $37,000, the top 4%. And if you're fortunate enough, blessed enough to make $48,000, you're in the top 1%. Of wage earners in the entire world. That's just incredible how rich we are, how blessed most of us are. And so while we can all point to someone and say, yeah, I'm not as rich as him, or I'm not as rich as I'd like to be, or as I'm going to be, or as I hope to be, the reality is, if we look at the big picture, compared to most people in the world, most of us are rich, aren't we? Compared to most people, most of us are rich when we take everything into consideration. And so it's over the last few weeks, we've kind of been reminding ourselves that we're so rich, even the problems, even the everyday frustrations that we have, remind us of the fact that we're rich. In fact, we've been encouraging you to use the hashtag #richpersonproblem to help remind all of us that some of those daily annoyances actually are just a reminder of just how rich we are. Take a look at three that just some of you turned in this week. Lisa Arthur says, frustrated because the battery in my electric toothbrush died this morning mid-brush. Don't you hate that? You got to do it the rest of the way. You know, you actually got to move your arm. That's a problem, right? But what is it? That's a rich person problem. What about this one? Janice Robertson said, we have to wait until next year when the house is paid off to upgrade our satellite. Poor us. All right, that's trouble, isn't it? That's a big issue, but that's a rich person problem. My favorite one, this is the granddaddy of all rich person problems. Check this one out. Carrie Evans says, tonight I ran out of bottled water and had to drink water from the tap. The horror, the horror. Remember when we all used to drink water from the tap? That's crazy, isn't it? But now we don't, because why? Because we're rich. We buy bottles of water. It's a rich person problem. And so I encourage you this week, especially next week, we're going to have a very special Black Friday edition of Rich Person Problems. So as you're out and about on Friday and Saturday, send us your hashtag Rich Person Problems of your events and your experiences at the mall or wherever you're at. And we'll have a special edition next Sunday of Black Friday edition of Rich Person Problem. But the reality is, and though it's funny to laugh at those kinds of problems, Jesus and the Bible make clear that because of our riches, because of our material blessings, we actually do have some problems. In fact, Jesus said our material wealth was the biggest thing that could keep us away from God. Jesus talked about money more than just about anything else because he knew that our possessions, our money, our wealth was the primary competition that God had for our heart. Because see, when we get a little bit of stuff, then it's easier for us to trust in that, to put our hope and our faith and our trust in our finances instead of God. And so that's why Jesus talked about it more than almost anything else. The Bible gives us the antidote to that to help us overcome our wealth problems. And that's what we looked about that very first week, that the antidote, how we get past our rich person problems is to be generous and to do more. And so we kind of came with this saying. We said that God has blessed us with more than we need. What are we, church? We are rich. That's right. God's blessed us with more than we need. We're rich. And then I challenge you to take up the second part of that, and that is because we have more, we will do more. And so that's the premise for the whole series. Because God has blessed us incredibly, because he has blessed us with more than we need, we will then do more. In fact, Jesus said, to whom much has been given, much has been required. So the standard is a little bit higher for us. Last week, we looked at the fact that when we are doing something and these issues are so big, our primary responsibility is just to bring what little we have, our inadequacies, everything that we have to God, and then he might do something great with that. In fact, it was a divine math problem we looked at. That was our stuff plus God's stuff equals enough stuff. So whatever the issue is, no matter how big it is out in the world, no matter how big it is in your own personal life, the divine math equation is true, that your stuff, whatever you bring, plus God's stuff, that's the power, equals enough stuff. And so that was what we looked at. And as true as that divine equation is, and it is true, it's also true that 2.4 billion, with a B, people in the world live on less than $2 a day. That's over half the world's children live in poverty. That's a lot. Over 1.1 billion people in the world, in developing countries, live every day without a supply of clean water. Every day, every 30 seconds, a child dies from malaria. That's a very treatable and preventable disease. Every 10,000 people, newborns, every day die within a month of their birth due to issues around poverty. In fact, in total, 19,000 children every day die due to the situation around poverty. Now, I don't know about you, but when you hear all those statistics that I just threw at you, it's easy for our eyes to glaze over, and it's like, oh my goodness, that's incredibly overwhelming. And what do you do with that kind of information? I mean, poor people have always been there, right? There's always been poor in the world, but part of our issue now is awareness, right? You're aware because I just made you aware, right? I made you painfully aware, gave you some of those statistics, and you might have said, no, I don't want to hear that. No, that depresses me, and I don't want to be depressed. And it's not my intent to depress you this morning. I just wanted to kind of throw out some reality of what life is like in the real world, in the actual world. But what do you do with that? How do you process that? Not just that, but then you throw in, you know, all the other things that you know about, you know, terrorism, the other things that we hear 24/7, and the stuff that you just personally know about, maybe in your own life or in the life of your friends or your family or your neighbors. You put all that stuff together and it can be overwhelming. How do you process that? What do you do with that? Well, a lot of people just kind of shut it out and say, I don't want to think about that, so I'm not going to think about that. I'm just going to kind of put my head down and go on about my business because it's too overwhelming. I don't want to think about it. But as we said last week, you know, I'm a Christian. Many of you are Christians. And that's not really one of the options that Jesus gives us, that option of turning a blind eye to the needs that are around us and to the big issues that are in the world. So what do you do with that? I mean, the issues are big, but you don't know exactly what to do. Then on top of that, and maybe this kind of gets on you the way it gets on to me, and we could go on a rant about it, but then there's some people, you know, what I'll call misguided compassion. You know what I mean? Some people kind of, maybe it's people or even governments that kind of throw money or throw something at an issue under the guise of being compassionate, but in the end, it actually does more harm than good. And so it's like, oh, wait a minute, that's not doing the right thing. That's not doing what we're supposed to. And so how do you process all that? I mean, the issues are huge. And what is it that we do about it? Well, fortunately, the Bible talks about that, gives us some direction. In fact, the Bible has over 2,000 verses that go directly toward the ideas of poverty and injustice. Over 2,000 verses. And so what do we do with those verses is the question. Last week, we kind of looked at a well-known story of Jesus feeding the 5,000, where the little boy brought his sack lunch to Jesus, and then Jesus did some incredible miracle and fed thousands and thousands of people with just that little bitty lunch. And we realized that no matter what the issue is, we just bring what we have to Jesus, and who knows, he might do something incredible with it. And that's certainly something for us to continue to remember. No matter what the issue is, just bring what you have to Jesus, offer it to him, and who knows, he might do something incredible. Today, we're going to look at a couple of verses that a man named Paul wrote and also a couple things that Jesus said as another way to kind of help us focus in, to kind of funnel down and help us to not be overwhelmed with the overwhelming issues that face us in the world. If you've got your Bibles, we're going to start in Galatians chapter 6. So you can turn to Galatians chapter 6, verse 9. Galatians is a letter that Paul wrote to Roman Christians in and around the area of Galatia, and he talked about all kinds of different things, but in these two little sentences we're going to look at today, he kind of helps us understand what our social responsibility is. How is it that we can look at overwhelming problems without becoming overwhelmed? Galatians chapter 6, verse 9 is where we'll start. He writes this, "Let us not become weary in doing good." I'm going to stop right there and ask you a question. Anybody ever become weary in doing good? You ever get tired of doing the right thing? I mean, when I think of that, weary of being of doing good, I think of a preschool mom, all right, a mom of a preschooler. I mean, it's just over and over the same thing, right? It's diapers, it's feeding, it's putting to bed. It's diapers, it's feeding, to put into bed. It's picking up stuff. It rinse and repeat, do it the next day, right? I think of a single parent, right? Over the last couple of weeks, Rhonda's been gone out of the country. I have a whole newfound respect for single parents, right? I'm exhausted. I don't know how you guys do it. All right, but I think of getting tired of doing the right thing. Then I think of Christians, right? I mean, we're supposed to do good all the time. We're supposed to be nice all the time. We're supposed to help all the time and serve all the time. And it's easy for us, or at least many of us, to get tired, to grow weary of doing good. Anybody ever got tired of doing good? Paul addresses us. He said, don't be tired. Don't get tired of doing good, for at the proper time, we will reap a harvest if we do not give up. Paul says, I understand the weariness that comes with the awareness of all the issues. I understand the tiredness that comes with being a Christian, being a follower of Jesus, and trying to do the right thing and trying to do good all the time. He said, I understand all that. Don't give up. Don't lose heart. Don't grow weary of doing good, but because at the proper time, you'll reap a harvest if you don't give up. Might not be in the short term. Might not even be in your lifetime, but don't give up, because your doing good will do good. It will come to some good end. So don't give up and don't stop doing good. Don't disengage. Don't say the problem's too big. Don't quit doing what you know you should be doing. Don't throw your hands up and say, I can't do anything about the whole thing, so I'm not going to do anything about any of it. He says, don't give up, because in the proper time you will reap a harvest if you don't give up. Don't lose heart. Don't lose encouragement. Stay encouraged, stay focused to do good. Verse 10. He says, therefore, as we have opportunity, and that little Greek word that's translated opportunity also sometimes gets translated time. Right? So the idea Paul is saying is, therefore, as you have time and opportunity, okay, as you have time and opportunity, I know it's easy to get weary, but as you have time, as you have opportunity, as opportunities present themselves to you, another way to put it, as opportunities present themselves to you, let us do good for all people, especially to those who belong to the family of believers. Paul says, as you consider your time and your opportunity, and we all have limited amounts of both, right? We have limited time, we have limited opportunity. Paul says, as you consider your time, as you consider the season you are in life, as you consider the pace of your life, as you consider the stage of life that you're at, as you have time and opportunity, let us do good for everyone, especially those who belong to the household of believers or to the family of believers. As you consider the time that you have, do good for those that you can. Now, at this point, I need to say a word about priorities, because I know many of you hear that as, I have time and opportunity, do good. Well, I got no time and I got no opportunity, so I don't have to worry about it, all right? I know some of you thought that, because that's my first thought. It's like, I'm swamped. I'm too busy. I can't do that. Jesus said this about priorities, and hopefully it'll kind of get us focused back in on what Jesus said. Jesus said, seek first his kingdom, God's kingdom, and his righteousness, and then all these things. What are those things? All the things that we hustle and bustle and hurry and scurry and all our busyness try to accumulate. He said, all those things will come to you as well, and those are fine. But seek first, as a priority, God and his kingdom and his righteousness. Now, the reality is, many of us are extremely busy. We're over busy. We're over scheduled. We have zero margin in our life. But if we're honest, most of it has very little, if any, to do with God's kingdom and God's righteousness. Much of it has to do with my kingdom, building my thing, doing what I want to do. And Jesus says, okay, I know you're busy, but here's a focus, all right? Seek first God's kingdom and God's righteousness, and all these things will be added. So into that kind of a context, Paul says, as you have time and as you have opportunity, as God presents you with opportunities, do good to those around you. Problem is, a lot of us are so overscheduled, we have no margin, and so we walk or run or drive very fast past what could have been our divine appointments for that day. The opportunities that God has sent our way for us to do good, we don't even see because we have overscheduled ourselves and made our margin of life so thin that we can't have eyes to see them. So Jesus says, seek first God's kingdom. And Paul says, into that kind of a situation, as you have time, as you have opportunity, do good for those that come. Paul said a couple of verses before in verse 2, carry each other's burdens, and in this way you will fulfill the law of Christ. Carry each other's burdens, and this way you'll fulfill the law of Christ. Paul says, in spite of the fact that there's problems out there that are too big for you to solve, you can't fully address them, we're still responsible to do good for some people sometimes. As you have time, as you have opportunity, as God brings opportunities to you, do good for those. That was just a few verses after what Paul said, if you were here with us several months ago, was kind of a key verse of a whole series where Paul said the only thing that counts is our faith expressing itself through love. The only thing that counts as a Christian is our faith expressing itself through love. So as we have time and as we have opportunity, we want to do good because that is the only thing that counts, is our faith in God expressing itself through love as we serve and do good for others. And that kind of brings us to our key thought for the day, and that's this, if you're keeping notes. Do for one what you wish you could do for everyone. Do for one what you wish you could do for everyone. Now, that flies in the face of something you heard as a child, all right? You heard it from your parents, you heard it from teachers, you heard it from coaches, and it was this. If I let you do it, what? I have to let everyone do it. If I give you one, what? I have to give everybody one. If I let you go, I have to let everyone go. And now, as a kid, you're hearing that. What did you think? No, you don't. It's like, no, you don't. I won't tell. Right? You can just give it to me. I won't tell. Everything's cool. Right? That's what we thought. Because we could see as a child the disconnect there, that sense of fairness wasn't the reality. It didn't have to be that way. And see, as an adult, sometimes we take that misguided sense of fairness and it keeps us from doing good because we think we can't do for everyone, so we won't do for anyone. But the principle I want us to learn is to do for one what you could do, what you wish you could do for everyone. Some of you guys are big on fairness, all right? Your parents, your grandparents, and you, like Christmas is coming up, and so you're going to be extremely fair. I know, and so you're going to make sure you buy exactly the same number of gifts for all the grandkids, right? You do that, don't you? As parents, you make sure each child has exactly the same number of gifts to unwrap, even if it doesn't make sense. Right, my grandma did this one time. I was 13 years old, and my grandma and grandpa were extremely generous, and they gave incredible gifts, and I always looked forward to Christmas at their house. But she had this incredible sense of fairness, so everybody was going to get the same amount of things. Well, one year, as I was 13, she gave me a very big gift, a very expensive gift. It was a weight bench. You can see how it worked, you know, because I'm pretty bulked up there. But it was a very expensive gift, but that was saved till the very end. But she wanted me to have stuff to unwrap when all the other grandkids were unwrapping stuff. And so she wrapped up little chintzy, junk, you know, stuff that you got at the dollar, you know, the dime store for a dime, you know. And so all my, you know, my sisters and my cousins are opening up this cool stuff, and I'm opening up junk. And I'm like, thanks, Grandma. That's awesome. You know, and you try to be gracious, and you try to, but it's like, what's going on here? Everybody's getting good stuff. I'm not getting good stuff. She was trying to be fair. If she'd have just said, hey, you got a really cool thing. It's big. It's in the other room. That would have been fine. I didn't need to open up all the little junk. But we try to be fair. Some of you parents take this idea of fairness so much, you want to spend exactly the same amount on each child, right? But that's hard to do because stuff doesn't cost exactly the same. I heard of one family that they, you know, after the presents, they gave to one of their kids an envelope with $2.34 in it. You know, just to make it balance out, because we got this idea of fairness. Everything's got to be fair. It's got to be the same. We take that misguided sense of fairness into our adult life, and we apply it in spiritual matters, and we think, because I can't do something for everybody, I'm not going to do anything for anybody. And I think the biblical principle is we can't do that. That's not an option for us as Christians. We must do for one what we wish we could do for everyone. Maybe you've seen those heart tearjerker, you know, commercials about, you know, the puppies or the other animals, you know, that are mistreated or whatever. They want you to adopt a puppy and whatnot. And maybe, you know, those have touched your heartstrings and you've gone to the pound or whatever and got a puppy. Anybody ever done that? You're good people, all right? Good people. But then, you know, because you know you can't do something for everybody. I mean, there's some people that try to do it. You know, there's that lady that takes in all the cats, right? All the stray cats. And if you have more than 9, it's you. You know, I'm sorry, but it's too much, right? We can't do for all of them. So do for one what you wish you could do for everyone. And while it's funny to talk about for puppies and for, you know, stray cats and whatnot, my prayer is that over the next few days, over the next few weeks, over the next few months, that God would point you in a direction of your one. That he would point you in a direction of who your one person would be. That he would nudge you toward that one family that really needs some help, some people to come alongside and help guide them through maybe a tough time that they're going through. That he would guide you to that one single mom who is just really having a tough time and really needs some support. That he would guide you to that one teenager who really needs an adult authority figure or a father figure in his life. That you would come alongside that person. That he would guide you to the one ministry, that one mission, the one organization that you can really invest in. Because the problems are too big. You can't do for everyone, but don't use that as an excuse not to do for anyone. In fact, Jesus himself said at the story where he told of what it was going to be like at the end of the world when everything was judged, and he told the story of the sheep and the goats. Maybe you're familiar with that. But the very end of that, as he said how he was describing who was going to get to go to heaven and who wasn't, he said this one sentence that just kind of blows my mind. Matthew 25, verse 40, he said, "Whatever you did for one of the least of these my brothers, you did it for me." Whatever you did for one of the least of these my brothers, you did for me. Jesus is like saying, I know it's too big, you can't do it all, right? But do for one what you wish you could do for everyone, because whatever you did for one of the least of these my brothers, it's the same as if you did it for me. So do for one what you wish you could do for everyone. Pastor Andy Stanley gives 3 suggestions on what that looks like. So real quickly, as you're filling your blanks, the first thing he says is go deep rather than wide. Go deep rather than wide. This idea of doing for one what you wish you could do for everyone, it's not just a general concern about the poor. It's helping a poor person or a poor family. It's not some general concern about, you know, orphans or child people that, you know, don't have families. It's taking one and making a significant difference. It's not a general concern about, you know, teenagers today. It's taking a specific interest in one or maybe a group. I mean, think about it. Jesus took 12, right? And he was God, okay? That was his group. I would suggest a smaller group than that, you know, just saying, all right? Focus in who is your one. Go deep, not wide. It's much easier for us to throw $10 here and $10 there and $20 here and say a prayer for this group here and say a prayer for that person there. And that's all good. Don't quit doing that. But don't just do that. Go deep, not just wide. The second thing, and I think I've inverted them on your insert, so sorry about that. But the second one, go time, not just money. Go deep rather than wide. Go time, not just money. Again, that's hard for us as Americans because most of us have more money than we have time, right? We're busier, so we throw a little bit of our extra money at something and it helps make us feel better. But if we're really going to do for one what we wish we could do for everyone, we've got to go time and not just money. We've got to invest. It's not just writing a check and forgetting about it. It's investing our life into someone else's life, into some other cause. So my hope for you, my prayer for you, is that you find that one family, that one organization, that one mission, that one problem, that one issue, whatever it is that God directs you to be your one thing, and you would go time, not just money. And then third, kind of wraps it up, you go long-term, not just short-term. Go long-term rather than short-term. It's a time commitment. It goes past just the immediate helping out of the one time. When God nudges you towards something, it's not just a category anymore. Now it's a family with faces, right? And you want to see it through. Now it's a real person with real issues. And it's not just a general issue. It's a real person with a real issue. And so we want to go long-term rather than short-term. We want to see something through as far as we can to the end. Make a commitment to go deep, to go long, to go time. And of course, when you do that, the money kind of comes along. But don't make it just be about money, because as long as it's just about money, then you'll miss the opportunities that God has for you, that he wants to use you to change not just the world, but perhaps you as well. And so that kind of leads us to our bottom line question this morning, and that is this. Who's your one? Who is your one? Pay attention. Look around you. Be sensitive to where God is nudging you. Or maybe you already know. Maybe it's an easy one for you. But keep your eyes open to the needs around you. Caitlin Crosby, the girl I told you about last week that founded and invented this giving keys, she said this: there are locks all around you. Maybe you hold the key to someone else's future. So look around you. What is your one? What is your one that not God is nudging you toward? You can't, world poverty is too much, but you could change it for one. That reminds me of the oldest preacher story that there is. Maybe you've heard it if you grew up in church, but about the old man that was walking along the beach, and it was just covered with starfish that the tide had washed in. And so the old man, knowing that if the starfish were laying there as the sun was coming out and the tide had gone back, they would die. And so one by one, painstakingly, he would bend over and pick up a starfish and throw it into the ocean. Right, and so he was just doing that. And as he was doing that, a young fellow walked along, and he saw what the man was doing and saw the thousands upon thousands of starfish, and he called out to them, "Old man, what are you doing?" And the old man told him, "It's like if I don't get the starfish back in, they're going to die." And he said, "Old man, there's thousands of these. You're old. You can't possibly make a difference for all of them." And the old man kind of straightened up and thought about that for a minute. As he bent back down and picked up another starfish and threw it in, he said, "I may not be able to make a difference for all of them, but I made a difference for that one." And he continued on. What is your one? Who is your one? Think about that as you watch this video.
My name is Kaylin Carolina Rodriguez. I'm 9 years old. I live in this house with my mom and dad and my two sisters. My mom gets sick a lot. It makes me sad, and I cry for her. I pray for her because I want her to feel better.
We often don't have enough money for food, and life is hard. I do get sick a lot, and I worry what will happen to my children if I got really ill. Kaylin tells me, "Mama, keep going." I want her to have a different life, not to live like this.
La historia de Kaylin.
Kaylin's story is one we see again and again in this community. Poverty is extreme here, and it is the children who suffer most. And so, when we reach out to a child like Kaylin through our compassion program here at the church, it is really about changing a child's life, giving a child love, hope, and the things they need to learn and grow.
I've asked my mom why I've been waiting a long time and still don't have a sponsor. If I had a sponsor, I had them and tell them I love them.
The first time I saw Kaylin's picture, something about her just drew me in. Realizing that here's a real child with a name and a family, and that I can get involved in that and change that story for her.
To a child in poverty, having a sponsor sends a message that it's truly life-changing. It says, you are known, your life matters, you are valued and loved.
I think Kaylin's major challenge would be feeling like she's worth anything. One of the worst things about poverty is that it steals from kids the one thing that God wants to bless them with so much of, and that's hope. So the fact that she's lived till the age of 10 in a hopeless situation is just, it's not right. And so I'm so excited that her life is about to change.
Kaylin has been coming to the church for over a year without a sponsor. I know she has been praying for one, and today it is my great joy to give her the good news. God has answered her prayers.
Jorge,
think Kaylin would be just overjoyed to be able to share that news finally with her family. I would imagine it would be a very joyful time. As Kaylin grows up through the Compassion Child Development Project, it'll change the way she sees everything. She will have confidence. She'll have, hopefully, a relationship with Jesus. I think she'll be crying some happy tears. There is no doubt that while none of us can change the entire world, we can each change the world for one child in need, and there are children who need us. There's a child who needs you. So I would encourage everyone to rush out to that sponsorship table and look at those kids and find the one that needs you, because one of them does.
So that's the question. Who is your one? I hope and pray that for some of you, it will be one of the children that are out there on that table. And you won't just take it and send your $38 in every month, but you will invest in that child, and you'll pray for that child, and you'll send correspondence to that child, and you will, in a very real way, adopt that child. For others of you, it might really be adoption. God might be nudging you to actually adopt a child, or for someone else to help someone who is thinking about adopting. Maybe you want to foster. Maybe it doesn't have anything to do with kids. Maybe your one, again, is that single mom that needs help. Maybe your one is the teenager. And if you wonder how to get involved with young people or teenagers, Kristen and Kevin would love to talk to you about how you can get involved in the lives of young people or teenagers. Maybe it's the neighbor, the coworker. I don't know who it is, but be open to the nudging of God and ask him, who is your one? Who would he have you do for one what you wish you could do for everyone? Just imagine for a minute if each one of us did that, how we could change this community. If every Christian did that, how we could even change the world. But even beyond that, maybe even greater than that, as you reach out and do for one what you wish you could do for everyone, it will change your world. Would you pray with me? God, thank you so much for choosing us, for choosing me as your one. God, you loved the whole world, but not the world as a group. Each specific person, you loved me so much that you sent Jesus. You loved each person so much that you sent Jesus. God, the issues we look at, and they're just so big in our brains, and we realize that with our limited resources and our limited time and our limited opportunity, we can't possibly do something for everybody. God, help us not. Help us not use that as an excuse, not to do anything for anybody. God, prompt us where you would have us to go and who you would have us to serve. Help us to be sensitive to that. Give us the wisdom to know what to do with what we've heard. Give us the courage to do it. Help us toward that end. In Jesus' name, amen.